Blog Talk Radio. Hi everybody, it's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio show, and I'm getting back into my flow now. This is like two weeks on the trot. I've got another conversation going, and I'm talking to my friend Ankush Jain, and he's based in. Are you based in London, Ankush?
I used to be. I'm based near Birmingham, which is just 100 miles north of London.
Yeah, he's based in the UK, just 100 miles north of London, near Birmingham, and Ankush is a coach, trainer, and speaker, and, well, without further ado, I'll bring him on the air. Hi, Ankush. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a real privilege to be here.
No, it's great to speak. Well, we spoke before. I spoke with you on your thing, is it a year or two ago, your relationship series thing?
That's correct. I interviewed you at the start of this year for the relationship series.
Was that just only this year? It seems longer ago than that.
I think it was January, yeah.
Wow, that seems ages ago. Well, we've just touched on the relationship thing there then. So would you want to, I always go down the old route with this and people find it interesting. Would you just tell people a little about yourself and who you are, what you do and what the hell you're up to?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a broad question, so yeah. I'll try and keep it brief, but I can't promise.
If it gets too long, I'll interrupt you, don't worry.
Well, yeah, my life, I guess it was a real turning point about 3 years ago. So I was someone who, you know, had a corporate job and fairly normal life, if you like, just used to go to work day in, day out. And one thing that I did have a passion about was personal growth and personal development. And it really came about from my younger years when I used to be quite shy and lacking in confidence, a little bit bullied at school as well. And what I discovered at a very young age was that, you know, my personality wasn't set in stone. And you know, I joined a youth group when I was a teenager, and that seemed to bring out some confidence in me. And then I switched schools when I was 17, and that changed. And then when I went to university, I was always interested in personal growth. And, you know, the thing that my friends used to joke about me was that the only thing that was constant was that I was always changing. But in a good way. And so I was a real big fan of that. And I turned 30, and as I turned 30, I thought about my career and I thought about what I was doing. And whilst I enjoyed my job and I liked the people that I worked with, I kind of felt this desire inside of me to do something different, to really follow my passion, some people call it. But I really had no idea what it was that meant. And so I spent like this whole weekend really trying to figure it out. And I thought, right, I'm gonna figure it out no matter what it takes, and I'm really gonna think hard. And that just got me more confused. And the following day, on Monday morning, I went to work and I forgot about it. And I thought, well, I don't know what to do, I'm no worse off. And that evening, whilst I was cooking, I had a huge insight. And my insight was that I'd been doing all this personal development work. A lot of people used to ask me for advice, and people actually told me to be a coach before. People had offered me a job. People that I trained with said, oh, you should be teaching what we're teaching. And I'd always dismissed it, and I realized that that's exactly what I should be doing. And it's funny because it had never even occurred to me over the weekend, and then all of a sudden it was so obvious.
Yeah.
And that was 3 years ago. And then what was kind of a double whammy was, I know a lot of your listeners know about the three principles.
Yeah.
Is the coaching course I signed up to was all based around the three principles. And so I kind of got in and signed up for coaching, and what I got was a whole lot more. And I entered the principles. A lot of people discover the principles first and then decide to become coaches or trainers. And I came about it from the other way around, where I kind of did loads of self-development, got to the stage where I'm like, oh, I'm done. I'm really happy with my life now. Now let me go and help people. And fell into the principles and was like, wow, there's so much more depth to life and so much more transformation that I had no idea about. And that's kind of really shifted me in the last 3 years. And I kind of then got a job. I got a job that I never thought I would get. And I moved to London, which I was there for 18 months. I then quit that job, and people thought I was crazy because it was kind of the dream job. And I'm coaching full time this year. I've spoken in Las Vegas and in Bucharest and, you know, all around the world to groups of people. And like you say, I do a podcast on relationships. So, I mean, all these things that I'm doing, I just wouldn't have thought they were possible a few years ago. But the biggest shift for me is it's just how I'm showing up in the world. And whilst I still get insecure, I still have doubts, I still have fears, it's a tenth less than that of what it was. and it's just a completely different experience.
That's beautiful, Ankush. Well, like I said, you've done a lot of personal development before you even, well, obviously, and that's what led you on to deciding to be a coach. But did you know when you signed up for the course, did you have any idea about what the principles were, or was you just thrown in at the deep end, so to speak?
I really had no idea.
Right. Okay.
So I was on the course, and I it was like two modules in. I'm like, what are these principles people keep talking about? Because the first speaker was Garrett Kramer.
Okay, right, yeah.
Who some people may know of, who uses the principles in sports coaching,
yeah.
But he didn't explicitly talk about the principles, although he did talk about the nature of thought. So it wasn't clear from Garrett that, you know, there was Sydney Banks and the principles. He didn't talk about any of that. And so I kind of completely missed it, but then I heard people talking about the principles. And it was probably maybe the third or fourth module before I actually inquired and went, who's this Sydney Banks person that I'm talking about? And I had no idea.
Right.
And it's funny because, you know, 3 months in, I finally bought the Missing Link by Sydney Banks, which everyone thinks is a fantastic book. I got it. I was so excited. I got it for Christmas. I asked my family, they go, what do you want? I said, buy me this book. I'd love this as a Christmas present. So I get it. I rip it open, the packaging, and I started reading through it. I flicked through it in about half an hour.
Yeah.
And I thought it was rubbish. I thought, what's this book that everyone's been going on about? This is not great. So I put it to the side, and it's funny because, right, cause, you know, it's such a common story.
Yeah.
I come back to it a year ago, and I can't believe it's the same book and how much wisdom the book contains. And I was like certain that it was a completely different book.
I'm laughing so much because my experience is very similar to yours. I actually was just the same. The book arrived. I didn't get it for Christmas. I got it off Amazon or something. But the book finally arrived, and I had been impacted by the principles, and I kept hearing about this magical. It was almost like the never-ending story kind of book. Was expecting it to be like magical things coming out of it, and I had exactly the same experience. It's like, first of all, it took me only 20 minutes to read it, and then I didn't see that much in it anyway. But now, like I say, I think it's the simplicity of all this as well is what make a lot of people just overlook it, because it's so simple of a lot of what's been pointed to that it's missed almost. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it really has got to do with the person who's reading the book. And I see this constantly. I'm sure. I mean, I read something from it the other day, because Brett Chitty just said to me, he goes, "Oh, I loved the last page in the Missing Link." And I went back and I read it, and it was like I was reading it for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I realized that again. I'm different compared to the last time I read the book. and in the future, I'll be different again. And so it's really, the book's the same. It's, I'm the person that's changing. And as I change and get a little bit more understanding, even though I don't understand very much, but what little bit more that I do know really makes an impact in terms of what I get from the book.
Yeah. I want to ask you about this a little more in a moment or two, but I just want to echo again what you're saying, because people who listen to these shows regularly, you know, I spoke to Dickin a few weeks ago, Dr. Dickin Bettinger, and I've been seeing things of my own little insights in lately, and he actually said to me, I mentioned to him that I hadn't gone through any of Sid's stuff recently, and he said, oh, go back to it. He said, I'm sure you'll find it interesting, which I knew I probably would just from past experience. And I was only watching some Sydney Banks DVDs last night, and I was, these DVDs I've heard and listened to so many times, but it's so wonderful that it was like I'd never seen them before. Just as you were saying, it was like I was seeing them for the first time, and I've listened to some of these. I have them on my iPod. Like I say, I've not listened to them recently, but I've listened to them many, many times, but I was just whammed by them and slapped across the face in many ways last night, but in a good way. So I'm just curious, what do you think that is? Because you more or less said the same about you can pick them up in, you may be able to pick them up in a year and you'll see something new. Would you like to try and have a bash at explaining why that is?
Yeah, I mean, I already said that I think that we're different as we come to these materials, but what I will also add is that there's so much depth in the books of Sydney Banks, in the videos and DVDs and audios. And I found, I mean, his audios are something that really impact me, and I love listening to those. And what I'll find is that I don't think I've listened to an audio of his and actually listened to it all the way through. Because every time I listen, something will impact me so powerfully that I go somewhere else in my head. and I'm kind of reeling from what I've just heard and reflecting on it. But the tape's carrying on, or the audio's carrying on, like, you know, another few minutes have gone by. And it's just so full of wisdom that it's very, very easy to miss. And so either we kind of skip past it, right? Certainly I do. I skip past it and don't realize, and then come back and go, oh, I never heard this before, because I wasn't really listening. Or the other thing is, I remember reading The Enlightened Gardener Revisited, which was one of his most recent books. And I remember getting stuck on about two pages in the book. I physically couldn't read past them. Every time I would try, I'd get about halfway down a page and my mind would seemingly stop. My brain would seemingly stop. And it was like I was drugged or something, and I couldn't speak, I couldn't move. I was just, you know, floored. And it took me about a week to get past those two pages because I kept doing the same thing. And it's so different to other self-development work that I came across before, which was all information based. It's like, here's a model, here's a good idea, here's something to go and implement and practice. And I don't tend to find that with the work of Sydney Banks. It's insight based. He's pointing to the truth about our psychological experience. He's pointing to some truths about life. And for me, as I understand those deeper and deeper, I change and I show up differently in the world, and there's huge transformation in my life. And it's really rewarding now, because I also get to see this. I think it's I say to people, I have the greatest job in the world, because I get to see this with other people now, and with my own clients. And it's remarkable, because I was talking to a client just the other day, and we were talking about something. And I was saying the exact same thing I've said to this person many times before. And he turned around and said, But it was one bit that I clarified, one tiny little bit, and he said, "Oh, that's what you mean." And I was almost, so I was like, "You didn't hear that before? That's what I've been saying the whole time." Because it's so deep, the work is so deep, and it's so different to so many messages that we get out, you know, in the world. I know you've just got to pick up the newspapers, or listen to a pop song, or watch a movie to just see how much misunderstanding there is in popular culture. So that kind of, I don't know if this is true or not, but I feel it impacts us, and we kind of get hypnotized by that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And I'm just struck as well, there's so many people I speak to who say, that are sharing this with people who say, "I've got the best job in the world." I think only the last person I spoke to last week, Jacqueline Hollow, she said the same thing. She's just got, and she was had a bit of a different experience with Sydney Bank. So when she first met him, she couldn't stand him. She just found him irritating in many ways. I might be using the wrong words there, but she just struggled so much, and then finally, it just all clicked in. So it's interesting how to some people it's just meaningless, isn't it? Gibberish, and some people can be impacted by it straight away. I know. I think we've got a mutual friend. I think it's Jamie Smart. He said he'd been given the book, The Missing Link, about 12 years ago, and he read it and thought it was just hippie nonsense. And then 10 years later, he picked it up again, and it blew his socks off, kind of thing. So it's so interesting. It's like you said, how it's seen differently from depending on the where you are when you're reading it, from the level of consciousness when you're reading it, I suppose.
And it's true for us as well, you know. Some people, you know, I'll talk about Jamie sometimes with my clients, and you know, refer them to some material he's produced, and it's kind of a real even split. Some people absolutely love what he's got to say in his interpretation, and some people can't stand him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the same is true of me and you and everyone else on the planet.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure of it. Yeah.
And that's been an interesting discovery for me, because I used to think that, you know, personality and was fixed, and then also our reaction to personality was fixed as well. So if I didn't like someone, that's definitely because of the way they are. And it's been very revealing to me, and shown me my own ego, as the principles have done many a time, that it really isn't the case. And anyone that I take in the world, someone loves them. You know, someone thinks the world of that person.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just through my own thinking that I'm judging and hearing them. And it's been, you know, a challenge in some ways to realize that for myself, because being very honest, you know, my whole life I've always wanted to be accepted. I've always wanted people to like me. I didn't want to offend people. Mm. And I've realized that a lot of that's got nothing to do with me. I can't really control and manage people's reactions to me. Well, you know, whether that's in a personal capacity or a professional capacity. Mm. And the more that I've kind of stopped worrying about what people think about me, not doesn't mean everyone likes me. But I found that I'm more effective whether again personally or professionally.
I think I only said this last week. I think when you learn to let go of that "how am I doing" kind of thinking with people, I think you've got more opportunity to just be yourself, haven't you? Because I know I can relate to that. I still sometimes I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and sometimes it's not served me. You know, it's people have taken advantage of me in the past because of that. But now I drop out of that more and more, and And there's when you just drop into that space of being who you are, like I'm sure, for example, with you, with your clients, if you're not necessarily, if you're just being authentically yourself, and then from that position, you're helping them. It kind of takes a burden off in some ways, I'd imagine, that you're not having, also having to deal with, and do they like me? Am I doing a good, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's been a big lesson for me professionally that coaching doesn't mean that people have to like me. Hmm. In fact, a lot of the times, you know, it's going against what is socially acceptable, perhaps, or what you would do in a social situation.
Yeah.
And I think Jack Kransky, who many people will know, I think is a great example of that. And I was reading earlier this year his book, Somebody Should Have Told Us. Hmm. And there were examples in that book where he's talking to a client and he's not being nice. He's not being friendly. He's being very direct with his clients.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not very social, sort of sociable, you know, as we would normally talk with people. But it's absolutely impactful and powerful for the person to hear, and hence he's put it in his book. And I've done the same with my clients. In fact, the more I've been coaching, quite often the more direct I've been. You know, as long as a person's open to it, I'm certainly not gonna, you know, force someone to be coached. But if I've got someone who's open to it and really has come to me because they want to have some kind of shift or change in their life,
yeah,
best thing that I can do is really be open and honest with them. And sometimes that may be at the risk of them not liking me, but I found that as I do that, I become more and more impactful. Hmm. And a lot of this stuff that does also apply to our professional lives. There are differences, but again, I'm far less people pleasing now.
Hmm.
And it's led to much more rewarding relationships with everyone in my life.
Mm. And I think on some level, though, it's because on some level, for example, when people are talking to a coach and perhaps they're coming up with their excuses, say for, I'm just using a scenario here of somebody who's wanting to achieve a goal, but they're making their excuses up why they haven't achieved this goal. And usually at our very core, we know usually the reasons we're giving are just bullshit reasons. And I think like a coach job is to just, like if you join them and say, oh yeah, I agree with you, yeah, you've got all these issues, then you're not doing your job as a coach. Whereas imagine if you, from now, you'd very clearly point out them things. And at some level, they'll, if a person really does want assistance, they'll thank you for that. Maybe not in the moment, but afterwards.
Yeah, I was only just talking to someone last week who was referred to me by a mutual contact.
Mm-hmm.
And this person was in a difficult situation. They'd been cheated on by their partner of 5 years and they'd left them. And, you know, I said to this person that, you know, do you want me to say what I'm saying? And they said, absolutely. And I said, well, you might not want to hear what I've got to say. And, you know, I'm fine if you don't want to go down that road, but I'm not here to be your friend. Mm. I'm not here to make you feel better. I'm here to help you, to be helpful, but it might be uncomfortable, some of the stuff I'm going to say.
Hmm.
And the person really understood that, and they said, no, absolutely. They said, I don't want a friend. I've got lots of friends. I want things to be different. And so that's what I believe the power of coaching is, and how it is different to just talking to a friend.
Hmm.
And that doesn't mean it's always like that. You know, sometimes it can be very friendly and very comfortable and collaborative.
Yeah.
About what makes sense in the moment.
Yeah, and you can be direct and still be coming from a warm place as well, can't you? It's not like you have to like start beating people up.
Well, I think it's all about where we're coming from.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I can be insecure and be really friendly, or I can be very certain in myself and be very friendly.
Yeah.
I can be insecure and be very tough, and I can be, again, very, very certain in what I'm doing and who I'm being and be very tough. It's got nothing to do with the behavior. And again, this doesn't just apply to coaching. It applies to so many aspects of our lives.
Yeah.
It really is about where, for me, where I'm coming from in the moment. And I'm by no means perfect, and I certainly get caught out. But I'm getting better at recognizing where my head's at in any particular moment, and whether I'm coming from a place of calmness and clarity, or whether I'm not seeing clearly.
I'm just seeing more and more. I don't know if you agree. That it's coming from that place of presence, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be just while you're in your coaching work. It's when we're in life in general, from moment to moment. Though when we live like that, when we remember to live like that, when we're not pulled by the egoic mind and our conditioning of what we expect from people or situations. And we can just drop into greeting each moment as it occurs, and with authenticity. There's such a freshness about life, isn't there?
Yeah, and you mentioned the word authenticity, and I agree with you. And I think that in certain circles, authenticity has kind of become a bit of a buzzword. And I find that a lot of people are trying to do authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, and I see people saying things or doing things to try and be authentic, and it's the most inauthentic thing.
Yeah, that's the opposite. Yeah.
It's so funny, and you know, authenticity is. Is not coming back when we're thinking about it.
No.
It's just who we are. And I'm not saying people are bad or they're doing it, you know, on purpose.
No.
But I just kind of wanted to make that point, because I do cringe sometimes when I see people who are talking about authenticity but not really being authentic. And I find that of everything that I've ever come across, getting a deeper understanding of life through understanding the principles has helped me become or show up more authentically than I've ever done before. And I know that there's more to come. This really is a journey for me and every single person who I've ever met. I was speaking to someone recently, and one of my mentors has been Chip Chipman. I absolutely adore the man. And someone said to me that he was doing, you know, a several day event recently, and he was sharing with the group that how he had had a big insight which had changed his life, changed completely how he understood the principles. And that insight had happened 2 weeks before this event, and this event happened this year. And to me, that's such, you know, the beauty of the principles, in terms of you can be around it for decades and decades and decades, and some people may call you an absolute world expert, and yet we can know nothing and constantly be learning.
Yeah.
And that leads to us showing up even more authentically, or it can drop us into even better relationships than we've had already, or another piece of our ego drops away that we didn't realize was there, and so on and so on.
I just had images of then, like, of when you said another piece of our ego drops away, I just had images of like the slabs of an iceberg just dropping off. And sometimes we think we've melted, and then we notice another slab dropping. But I really liked what you said then about, there was a few things I really liked what you said there. I like what you said about Chip. After all these decades he's been around it, the understanding and these people are still coming up with new insights and new understanding. And I was only talking to Dickie, and he was more or less saying that himself just the other week, how he's just been seeing things differently and looking at things differently. And I really liked what you said about the authenticity, because I agree with you. I throw that word around quite a lot, and a lot of people do. And it's a good word. And if it's pointed, and a good word, that's probably a silly thing to say. I agree totally with what you're saying, that sometimes people are trying to be authentic, and that's just very, I don't know, it has the opposite effect for sure. I had a friend, I remember, it's funny, I was reminded then of my younger years, and I used to work in a factory, and there was this one guy, nobody particularly liked him, and then one of my friends hit the nail on the head. And he was always trying to be really nice, this guy. And then one of my friends said to him, he called him, he goes, oh, well, I'll clean the language up a bit. He goes, he called him Mr. Effing Sincere Head. And it was like he was too... There was a falseness of, like, he was asking, oh, how are you doing? But it wasn't a genuine, it wasn't an authentic question, you know. It was, I don't know, I was just really reminded of that. He was saying the right words and making the right, having the right mannerisms, but it wasn't real, it wasn't true. And I think we're energetically, people can see past the words, and they can see past actions and mannerisms, and they can feel where you're really coming from. And I think, like we talked about presence recently, I think if somebody's really present, then the authenticity is just a natural side effect of that, isn't it? Would you agree?
Yeah, I'm recalling a situation, as you said that, where I must have done a training course, this is several years ago, before I was a coach, before I learned this stuff. And I had read somewhere, I'd done a course for something where it talked about, you know, connecting, personal connection with people. Mm. And I used to deal with suppliers for a very large construction company. And so my suppliers came in, and I was never like this. I was straight down to business every time.
Yeah.
So they came in, and I spent 10 minutes just asking them about them and asking them about their kids. I really didn't care about their kids. Really, I was doing it because I'd read about it and it was a good idea. So they were kind of looking at each other, because they were asking the questions very politely. And thinking, what's got into Ankush? Why are you, like, suddenly interested in our personal lives? And then once I'd done that 5-10 minute piece, I then suddenly went, okay, well, like, now back to business. And then I never asked them about it again in any future meetings. It must have been so obvious to them that, okay, he just read a book, or he's just been on a course.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. You know, the principles, we're not really talking about these behaviors. And this is what I see the difference in the principles and other personal development, other personal change work. Because, you know, and I work a lot with men who are, you know, into personal development and into personal change.
Yeah.
I find that, and I was the same, I'd be looking at certain behaviors, or I'd be looking at certain attributes that I was trying to emulate.
Yeah.
People talk about gratitude in the same way, you know, be more grateful, wake up in the day and be grateful for everything. and I did that. It's really hard work. I remember one day, this sounds really embarrassing, but I remember, like, spending a whole day being really grateful, and every time I took a sip of water, I'd be grateful for the water, and it felt nice, but I couldn't keep it up. And people do that with so many different attributes. They do it with gratitude. They do it with being authentic. They do it with, are you in integrity? Just, you know, finding your passion. It's all these things that we're trying to emulate. And so many people are doing that very, very innocently, because they think that is the key to success or happiness or fulfillment or something else.
Yeah.
And what I never really realized was that there are principles about how we experience reality, which once we get a better understanding of those, all of those behaviors that everyone else is looking at naturally fall into line. Mm. So I don't wake up in the morning and do gratitude ever. I don't do that anymore. And yet I've had moments of pure blissful gratitude for life where, you know, I'm not really a crier, but, you know, in the last 3 years, there'll be moments where I'll be close to tears just for the pure gratitude of life, or what, you know, or just, you know, grateful for what's around me.
Yeah.
And it's come from nowhere, seemingly nothing, but it will just rise up in the moment as my mind is a little bit quieter and clearer than it was for the whole of the rest of my life.
Mm.
And it's the same with so many other things. You know, I wanted to be more comfortable in my own skin. And I remember being at social situations years ago, and I'd be there and I'd be really scared and in my head and wanted to go and talk to people. But, what if I say something stupid? What are they going to think of me? And I had this whole dialogue going on in my head. And obviously people could sense that I wasn't really comfortable. You know, people pick up on this.
Yeah.
And just the other day, we were talking before we started recording, I was in Chicago with a room full of other coaches. And, you know, several people came up to me and they said, you know what, you're really comfortable in your own skin. You know, when you talk to the group, you don't change your posture, you don't change your body language, you just are. And it was really curious to me because I thought, oh, I would have been so bothered about that before to make sure that I was authentic and I was comfortable in my own skin, and I just don't think about it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of started to happen. Now, that's not to say I don't get insecure. Of course I do, like most people, but I just don't seem to spend a lot of time analysing things.
Yeah, just prolongs it, doesn't it? The more you start thinking, oh, I'm in a bit of insecurity at the moment, it just seems to prolong it. For example,
yeah, I was the king of analysing. I used to analyze.
I think you and me are very similar, Ankush. I could just relate to so much of what you've been saying.
Yeah, it was, you know, and now it's so funny for us to talk about it, right? But it's how I used to live my life. It sounds like that's how you used to live your life too.
Yeah. Well, we're just going back to, let's say when I first started these conversations, I've said this a few times, I'm quite a shy person. Well, I always was told a lot, should I say. I was told as a child I was shy, and then it was kind of one of those beliefs that I picked up on and I adopted it. And then I, there's plenty of times when I'm not shy, and then occasionally I can pick it up again. And I really did get into some insecurity when I was talking, because I'm a simple working guy, and quite often when I'm speaking to highly educated people on these within these conversations, and then as soon as I start thinking like that, that's when I start kind of clam up. And then when I let go of those ideas, sometimes I come out with silly questions and drift all over the place, but generally the conversations that come out are usually, well, I get quite a lot of nice feedback of people who are educated themselves, so I can't be doing too bad. But it's so interesting how I can fall into that. I fell into some insecurity, for example, I think after the, well, I've put it out today on Facebook, I interviewed Muji, a non-dual teacher. I don't know if you're familiar with him. And I've put him on quite a high pedestal in my mind. I just really appreciate where he's coming from. And then eventually when I got to interview him, I was as nervous as hell, because I'd built him up in my mind and put him on this kind of pedestal. But he was kind of just laughing because I told him I was anxious. But it was so interesting how I could hear the nervousness, the shaking of my voice, and the questions were all over the place. Even though with this understanding, it's still, like you say, it can still come up, and you can still, oh, well, I'm speaking to Muji now, so this is actually, this is why this is happening, and it's just all made up.
Can I share a story with you about...
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because I had, an insight about this year. Really at the start of the year, which was pretty profound for me, where like you, I had a belief, I had a thought, I had a story, all the same thing, about being a shy person. And I recall being, I don't know, 10 years old and having some people around at the house, my parents had some people around, family, friends, relatives. And my dad would say, oh, come downstairs and meet people. And I would get very shy around people. And my mum and dad, well, I don't know what happened, but this is my recollection of it, was they would say, oh, you know, he's so shy. Oh, he's like a girl.
Right.
We've got a daughter on their son. And that became my story of I'm this shy person, I'm this shy guy. And my story was that, you know, over the years, my journey was to overcome my shyness and become this confident, well-presented man.
Yeah.
And I believe that. Mm. And I would hear people talk about that, you know, we are what we're looking for already. And, you know, we're just trying to rediscover that and these sort of things. And I really didn't believe that with regards to my shyness, or I didn't really put that together. And at the start of this year, I suddenly recalled a very early memory of myself. And that memory was, I was very, very young, maybe 3 or 4 years old. And I was in India, and we were visiting some family. I was visiting my parents, my mom's kind of cousin brother. And they, in India, you have these colonies, so you have these big kind of tall buildings, lots of tall buildings in one area, and it's kind of like a compound. And so we were visiting someone, and my uncle, I can't remember why, but he took me to one of the other buildings to meet a few of his friends. And we met this young girl who was his friend. So I went over to meet her and said hello, and all I knew as a little kid was, oh, I liked her, you know, and she was, you know, a lot older, you know, she was kind of my uncle's age. And I was just a little kid, and I just remember liking her, you know, and we went back, obviously, to his apartment, or to their apartment, and his parents or him, they must have given us some sweets or something, because, you know, we'd come over, and we were kids, and, you know, they wanted to spoil us or whatever. And I refused to leave the house unless I shared my sweets with this girl. and they were like, no, these are for you. They're not for her. She can get her own. And I said, no. And I was kind of really firm with this little child. and I made them take me back over to her flat. And this is before mobile phones and all the rest of it. So we couldn't let her know we were coming. So we went back over, rang the bell, and she kind of opened the door, and she's really surprised. And in my memory, I'm kind of holding up this box of sweets or chocolates and saying, half of these are for you.
Right.
And, you know, obviously she was so taken aback, and she kind of gave me a big hug. And I had no shyness then. I had no shyness at 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
And it completely changed my whole understanding of my shyness. And whereas before my story stopped at kind of 10 years old, that was my identity, the shy guy. All of a sudden now the context has increased, because I go back to being younger than that, and I had absolutely no problem being shy.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, no problem connecting with other people.
Yeah. Some of the stuff we pick up along the way, isn't it? Along our journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm reminded very much of one of my sons there. He was a chatterbox, speak to anybody as a toddler, and then as he slowly got older, he picked up the similar kind of shyness like I did. So it's so interesting, because I could see he was from being like almost an extrovert toddler to being like a very quiet young man. It's interesting how we pick these ideas up and then own them, and not just on shyness, in many. We just limit ourselves. There's so much of our conditioning, don't we? Things that we pick up that we believe is part of ourselves. And very often anything that we own like that can be limiting, even sometimes if it's I was going to say, even if it's a positive, what could be seen as a positive attribute. Like, for example, pleasing people. Some people might say, oh, well, that's not such a bad thing. But like I say, I can see in my life how it's sometimes it's not served me. People have taken advantage.
And maybe not served the other person either.
No, when they might, it might not have served them for somebody to be at their beck and call. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Yeah. So, Ankush, I want to take you back to something you said. And I, in many ways, I think we've been diving into this. Well, I know we've been diving into this as we've been talking. But I think you said, when you first came across this understanding, you saw that there's so much more depth to life than you had any idea about. And I think we've been talking, like I say, we have been talking about that, but would you like to explore that a little more? Would you like to talk about that a little more, about what you are seeing now about life?
Well, I'll tell you my view about the principles. My first kind of teacher, if you like, was Garrett Kramer. And I did a three-dayer with him, and I had a huge insight about thought and anger for me. And it was very profound, and it had a huge shift on me. And I became far more productive in my work. I became far closer to my family, all through this one insight. And things really started to change in my life. And when I finished that weekend, I remember asking Jamie Smart, who was running the course, what are we going to learn for the rest of the year? You know, what else are we going to learn? And he said, well, it's pretty much this is it. And I remember looking at him thinking, you know, is everyone else a bit sick? You know, like, how many times do you want to go over the same stuff? And I came away from it realizing I didn't know everything, but at least with regards to this understanding, I knew I must have got about 90% of it. And, you know, fast forward 6-8 months to the end of the course, and I realized, well, I probably don't know 80 or 90. I probably know about 60. But, you know, I know a little bit less than I thought. And then if you fast forward again another year, and in the middle of that, I got some coaching from Keith Blevins. I realized, well, I don't know as much as I think. Maybe it's about 40%. And that was kind of like last September. And in the last year, I've been telling this story. And when I started telling the story, the number started about 20%. And then every time I would tell the story, the number would drop because I'd realize, well, I don't know that much.
Yeah.
It's more like 10%. And then it went to 5 and then 2 and then 1. And then 0.1, and where I am right now is it's just minuscule. Like I know nothing, you know, 0.00001% about what there is to know and about the depth of this understanding. And it's funny because with so many other things, you think that, you know, you learn a lot in the beginning, and then you just learn incremental small things, and so the impact gets smaller over time. And yet for me, it hasn't seemed to slow down. You know, my early insights were huge. And then I think, well, there can't be any other big insights. And then I still have massive insights.
Yeah.
Every single month or year, something big will pop out that fundamentally shifts how I see the world and how I show up in the world. So there is just incredible depth. And I see that through my own experience of how I've changed. I see it with my clients and how they have shifted and continue to shift. And I see it with every single other person that I have ever met at a conference or a training seminar or anyone that I've interviewed. It's a constant evolution and there is no end to it.
I'm loving this conversation. Like I often do, I'm always so lucky to have these conversations. I always enjoy the conversations. But there's been so many similarities and correlations as we've been talking. Sheila and I only did a talk on Sunday. We do occasionally we get invited to a yoga holiday breaks place and we get the opportunity to chat about the principles. And it's about a year since we've last been up there. And I actually started off with saying, I know nothing. So I used to think I knew something about this. And I actually started off with pretty much what you were saying. It was so interesting that I thought I knew something, and now I'm realizing I don't really know anything. And then started to speak from that place, and it was very interesting. I think both Sheila and I felt it was probably one of the best sharings we'd done up there. And I think we're both coming from that space of letting go of what you know and just meeting people in the moment and just seeing what comes out from this understanding. And I was hearing very much that, what you were just saying.
Yeah, because once we think we know, we can't learn anything new.
Yep.
That's certainly been my experience, that if I think I know something, then my mind is closed off to learning anything new about it. But when I'm open to the fact that I don't really know anything, except what I do, which is just coming from a feeling. But when I open to the fact that I don't know anything, then I leave kind of some mental space for me to learn something new, for new insights to come in.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things, we don't know what we don't know. And there are things about myself that I can't see right now. And yet I know that over the coming months and years ahead, that things will be revealed to me as I stay on this path, and suddenly a whole block of misunderstanding will fall away.
Mm.
And once it's fallen away, I'll be like, how did I not see that before? that's just the nature of things. Mm. You know, it's you don't know what you don't know. It's once you know, you know. And that process kind of carries on for our whole lives.
Mm. I'm reminded of, I read the Krishnamurti book, Freedom from the Known, and he talked very much about this. And I must admit, when I first heard people talking about the intellectual, what you know intellectually is very limiting when you're holding on to that, I didn't quite grasp what they were saying. And there may be some people now who are listening to this thinking, what are these two guys talking about? But I would just ask anybody who is this, who struggle with those terms, to stay open-minded. And in many ways, staying open-minded, it's just allowing that space. It's the same kind of thing for new thinking to come in. Like you said very beautifully, it's just the intellect, it can serve us well, but if we put all our eggs in that basket, there's only so many omelets you can make. Whereas, go on, sorry.
Sorry.
No, carry on.
I was going to say that the intellect is just a tool.
Yep.
So, you know, I was always a fairly bright child at school. I seemed to do well, you know, relatively speaking. And yet that only took me so far. And, you know, one of my clients actually said this to another client. I was doing a training course, and they said something along the lines, one client to another client, you can't think this one to the ground. And to me, that points to, you know, when we try and use the intellect to solve our problems, and I'm not saying the intellect isn't useful, it is, and it can be useful, and it can be used to solve certain things, but it's just a tool. And when we're caught up in our heads, when we're not thinking clearly, when we have misunderstanding, we can't just keep thinking about it to get the answer. That's what led me to be very analytical and over-analytical when I was younger, and it didn't do me any good. And in fact, people used to tell me all the time, you think too much. But I didn't know any other way to be. I didn't realize I even had a choice in that. And so what we're talking about, in my opinion, is recognizing that, and recognizing that rather than overusing the intellect, that it's just a tool and it can be used. And if we leave space, it, you know, and I'm sure other people have used this example on your podcast, but, you know, it's why people tend to have good ideas, you know, when they're in bed or in the shower. It's because their intellect tends to be quiet and down in those moments. And it allows some space for new thinking to come in, for new ideas, for new thoughts, for creativity to flow. as opposed to let's really try and think and think and think.
Yeah, rack our brains. Yeah, I've loved having this conversation with you, Ankush. Again, I'm just echoing what I said before. Just so interesting how we seem to be sound like we're on the same page in our journey in many ways. But we've already the hour always flies by so quickly, and I'm chatting to people. We're already nearly coming to the top of the hour. I was just wondering if anybody wanted to get in touch with you or wanted to work with you. First of all, have you got any events coming up or anything like that within your work?
Yeah, well, firstly, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you and a real privilege for you to have me on here. You're doing a great job, and you've got some amazing speakers that you've had on previous shows, and no doubt again in the future.
Thank you.
With regards to people wanting to work with me, one thing that I've got an event coming up. So I recently interviewed Gabriela Maldonado, who is a three principles practitioner from California. She's been teaching for about two decades in many different fields, you know, from the criminal justice system to schools to corporations. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people, but we just seem to really hit it off. And I was thinking I would love to do an event with this lady. And when we finished recording, before I could even say anything, she said, I would love to do some event with you around relationship. And so that was such a kind of synchronicity of almost like a coincidence that we said, let's just do this.
Yeah. And she's lovely. She is lovely, Gabriela. I know Gabriela very well. Yeah, she's a lovely woman. Yeah,
and just so much fun. If anyone has been kind of seen any of her stuff, she's a really, really good laugh. And we seem to have a good connection. So we're doing a series of webinars. I'm recording the first one tonight, so that will be in the past for people listening to this. But whenever this goes out, well, I'm doing a webinar every week for the next 5 weeks.
Okay, so you're speaking to her tonight, are you?
I am, yes.
Oh, will you please say hello to her from me, won't you?
I will do, yeah, I'll let her know.
Ask her how dirty Harry is. If you say ask her how dirty Harry is. her husband is an ex-cop, so I always call him Dirty Harry.
Brilliant, I'll ask the question.
Okay, sorry to interrupt, go on.
No, that's okay. And then on the 6th of November in Birmingham, we're doing an event. We've already got 27 people coming to that, and it's I think still 5-6 weeks away at today's date, but please do come along. It's called Rediscover the Fun in Your Relationship, but you don't need to be in a relationship if you want to come. It's going to be a lot of question and answers, and Gabrielle and I will be open to just creating a fun experience and having people come along. And we've just kept it super cheap, so tickets are between £10 and £20, depending on when you book them. So that's probably the easiest way to get hold of me. And then if anyone wants to work, I do work a lot. My main business is working with one-on-one clients. So the easiest way to do that is just to contact me through my website, which is www.ankushjain.co.uk. That's ANKUSHJAIN. And you can get all the links to my Twitter and my Facebook and my podcasts and my LinkedIn and I think everything, YouTube, it's all there. So that's the place to go.
Yeah, you've got some amazing stuff out there, and I know I've seen plenty of those, and quite a few of them have been coming out recently as well, and more great stuff, yeah. And like I said, like I've mentioned before, I know Gabriela, and Gabriela's coming over here to be part of the Viva event, so if you don't get a chance to see Gabriela with Ankush, hopefully you can come over to the Viva event and see her. We've got plenty of people coming over for that. And it's where you mentioned Jack. Jack's just arrived here today, Ankush. I should have been down there this evening at the hotel, but Sheila's gone down, so he's over here for a training. So I'm looking forward to spending time with Jack.
We'll do give him my regards as well. I don't have a funny nickname for him, but say hello anyway.
Oh, will do. But it's been lovely. It's been absolutely lovely talking to you. And we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, I would love that. If your listeners would love to have me back on, I would love to come back and talk to you again.
And I'm sure people got a good feel for you, how you came across, I think, within this conversation. So, lovely. And I'd like to say, I did mention the Viva event. That is coming up in November. We've got people from all over the world coming from that, and like I said, Gabrielle's going to be part of that. We've got Ian Watson, we've got Rudy and Jenny Kennard, we've got people from every part of the globe who are working in the field doing stuff like Anne Cush is doing, people who are actually working with people and having great results, and they're coming over and they're sharing their wisdom, and it's going to be that's going to be a fun event too. So if people are interested in that, just give me a shout at icecreamforthesoul@hotmail.com. And I'm pretty sure that after this conversation goes out with Anne Cush, next week will be my conversation with Muji. I mentioned that conversation briefly. And even though I was quite nervous, I think we ended up having quite a good conversation. So that's going out next week. So just feel free to keep your eyes open or on Facebook or on Blog Talk Radio Show or iTunes, wherever you pick this up from, or get in touch with me for any information on that. So thanks again, everybody. Thanks for joining me, and have a great week. And would you stay on the air, Anne Cush, after we stop recording?
No problem.
Okay. Okay, bye, Anne Cush. Bye, everybody.
Thanks.